Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello there and welcome to this episode of the Match Ball Podcast from Oslo, the Square Ball. Following the Derby draw, I'm Dan Moylan. Michael Normanton's here.
Hello.
And so is Moscow Whites.
Hello.
Back to the place where all this started then, the return of the Griefcast, good and proper. Can we unpack what happened there today, boys?
My prediction was basically correct, which was 2-0. 2-0 win. Mm. Should have happened.
I think my prediction was also correct. 20-0 win. Only we didn't take all 20 of our chances.
I mean, it could have been, in the cold light of day, it could have been quite a different finish had Click slotted that penalty home. I think we need to remember that before we start losing our collective shit. But very, very disappointing end. And perhaps it's what happened after that, though, that is the slightly alarming bit. The completely inevitable late equaliser that we all saw coming from the second that rolled wide of the post.
Yes, it was. It was weird. There was a moment that really stood out to me. I think the 88th minute when Derby won a free kick wide on the left and it was going to be crossed in. And the atmosphere around the stadium was just this murmur, this kind of this tension.
Oh, bloody hell.
Yeah, everybody. And they didn't score from that. But it was just this feeling. There was no confidence anywhere. And I'm not saying it's something that necessarily transmits itself from the stands to the players, but it's definitely something that is, if you take the fans and the players as kind of a whole, we're all part of this, we're all in this together. I think everybody is feeling that same thing in the mind, that if we get to the 88th minute and it's only 1-0 and it should have been 20, we're going to concede, and it's in the back of everybody's mind. And then it happens, which I couldn't believe. Even when I was thinking that, because I was thinking all the way towards the end, like we're going to concede, I didn't really think it would happen. And it happened.
And the more we do it, the more you think it. Seems somehow to make it feel more like it's going to happen, which you know isn't true. It can't be true, can it?
We're willing this upon ourselves.
Can you think yourself into a bad result? I don't know.
Yeah, I think you can. I think there's...
I know what you mean.
There's certain things to do with confidence that that are very real about what we're doing. If you look at... obviously, Bamford gets a bit of... grief for missing some of the chances, but the one where he should have played in Alioski and he went for goal instead is one where I think if he'd scored his earlier chance, he'd be like, hey, I've got a goal, I'll pass to Alioski, it's fine. But he's so desperate to score that he's not making that right decision in that moment. And it becomes cumulative. You've got Jack Harrison is not hitting the play with the cross, so he's thinking, oh, well, I need to do a different thing this time and not... maybe not necessarily trusting his instincts, and that's kind of...
I know what you mean. It's the pressure, isn't it, of not quite getting the results that we need, and it just starts to grow and it starts to creep in and the crowd transmits as a little bit as well.
In many ways, just not getting the result we deserve as well, because we deserve to win every game this season. Like to say we've taken 3 points from... No, say that again.
However many points.
To say we've taken 2 points from 3 home games that we've dick the opposition in, basically. And the thing is, in today, we didn't even score. It was an own goal. For all the chances we had and all the possession we had, it still took an own goal for us to actually get the ball in the net.
Because there's nothing actually fundamentally really wrong, is there? It's just missing something. I mean, I'm left with the word lacking killer instinct is all I can think of. I can't even define it.
We were around them all the time today. Everything seems to go down the left in the first half. And ordinarily you'd say Harrison had a bad game and should have connected more of his crosses, but then Costa came on and we got worse as a whole. The unit as a whole didn't function as well with Costa on, which leaves you thinking, well, maybe what Harrison is doing is important in ways we're not seeing. But he was so frustrating in the first half. Like some players you say kind of are all pace or they're good in the air, but can do nothing else. His one thing is his first touch, really. His first touch is always absolutely perfect, but then he just kicks it straight to their player time and time again in the box, and it's very frustrating to watch.
That's what I mean about the killer instinct. It's until we get in the final third, because the final ball's never quite good enough, and we seem a lot of the time, despite the number of chances we're making, they're either half chances, maybe long shots, that kind of thing. It's those tap-ins at the back post, the classic Bielsa goal, or the give and go down the line where somebody cuts in and pulls it back. We didn't seem to get many of those today.
And the ones that we did get, again, there was the one right at the start of the second half when Bamford hit the post, and that, I mean, that should just go in. It's like, it's frustrating. There was a cross that flashed across goal in the first half, and you just think, like, how is he not quite connected with it? And this is not haranguing him. It's just that he's the striker, and
it's his job to score.
And those
goals
are the ones and you just wish, it's not having a go at him for not scoring them. It's just wishing that one that hit the post had just gone in. And then what is the difference between width and the width of a post? Why is it going one side and not the other?
There was an interesting call I heard on BBC Radio Leeds in the post-match, which was somebody saying that they're still willing Bamford to have a good game and willing him to score. And I think that's maybe part of the problem surrounding Bamford, is that a lot of it is we are still willing him to have that killer game. And it never quite materialises. There still feels like there's something missing, and I don't know what that is.
I thought it was good today. I mean, contrast this performance with his playoff semi-final performance against Derby, which was atrocious. He didn't win a single ball in that. The one big John Charles header he did win in this and left Richard Keogh in a heap, he got penalised for. But he was good in this game. He did some nice things. Won a penalty, hit the post, which he should probably have scored. Had another chance, which he put over the bar by about 20 metres with his right foot. But, he was in the right positions and stuff. Yeah. Whereas the playoff defeat, you couldn't really point to anything in his game that was any good. Whereas in this, he probably really had the better of the centre-halves.
Yeah, so, he plays well. It's just, it's frustrating. You want that goal. And I don't know what more can come, because the crowd, he's in a weird situation because the crowd is definitely on his side, because you hear his name being sung after he misses a chance and after he won the penalty, everyone's singing Bamford's name. But then also, as soon as Eddie Nketiah goes and warms up, he gets his name sung as well. So there's that real almost schizophrenia where the stadium is saying, we really want Bamford to do well and want to get behind him and not criticise him. But we also really want him to just go off so that Nketiah can come on and score the goal that we think he's going to score that he didn't today.
I mean, he was ineffectual when he came on today. I thought that about both of the subs, actually. Is this a fair comment that neither of the subs, either Costa nor Nketiah, got up to the pace of the game or the flow of the game?
No, nothing really worked. And then Douglas coming on, Alioski moving to the wing. Once Alioski was on the wing, he didn't really do anything either. But it was by that point, we about sort of 60-minute mark, which I think is when Costa came on, that was when we just lost our grip on the game. You can't stress how much better we were than them. Like, we were taking the piss. Yeah. I think the way Koku's got them trying to play is a bit like us, but they're really bad at doing it. Like, they cannot play out from the back. Within the first 15 minutes, we probably caught them three times trying to play out the back. Richard Keogh is a shit footballer.
I will say, because I will put hands up, and obviously me predicting the click or score of the penalties is not great, but I did predict Derby would play this way because I slept through half of their game against Cardiff and saw this, that they just pass around until they make a mistake and lose it. And that's really all they came. And before the match, I was checking their last few games, and basically every game they play, their two centre-halves is their strongest passing combination. They play like 30 passes to each other, and then they just aren't, they like complete five to any other player. But they've got no clue. I've not seen a team that bad. It was getting close to Yapstam's Reading levels when Elland Road actually laughed at how bad Reading were. And we had the Olays at 35 minutes. And even all through the second half, it was really bizarre. And I would be really worried if I was a Derby fan at how easy it is to get the ball off them. Like, it seemed like either they would give it to us, or if we wanted it, any one of our players would just go up and just like tackle them and we've got the ball. And it should be harder than that in the Championship. They're absolute garbage.
I think they are in deep, deep trouble.
Yeah.
If they're starting every game like that. And they essentially got lucky and rode the flow of the game to their advantage today. Had Click's goal gone in, the penalty, then we wouldn't be sat here worrying. Yeah. We'd have gone, oh, well, maybe a slightly sticky start to the second half, but then we got the penalty and put it to bed.
And to go to the substitutions thing, I think there's a sense where we've maybe got things the wrong way around and we can solve this without criticising Bamford or bigging up Nketiah too much. I think if we start with Nketiah, some of those chances that Bamford had go in the net. And then I think if we end with Bamford, the ball stays up the other end. Because we're kind of doing it the wrong way around. Because he's very good. The penalty that he won, I think it's quite a bad... He was given a good chance to go through on goal. I think he took a bad touch and then he worked really hard to make it into an opportunity. Got into the penalty area and then Richard Keogh happened. And that's what you need at that end of the game, is somebody keeping the ball, trying to keep winning it. That's not really what Nketiah could or would do, but what Nketiah can do, and what we've seen, is that if there's a ball flashing across the six-yard box, like the one that hit Bamford hit the first post after straight after half-time, or the one, I think it was a Dallas cross, and he just didn't get on it early in the first half, I think those go in the net. So Nketiah can start the games, get us 3-0 up instead of 1-0, and then Bamford can come on, and we'd probably then score 4 or 5. He might add another couple when against a tired defence. We've got this idea that Bamford is maybe tiring them out first, as he did in the last game, and then we bring Nketiah on to finish it. But I think it might be better the other way around and get the best out of both of them.
I think you may be onto something there, because Nketiah would tire out the likes of Richard Keogh, who then doesn't have the physical strength left to deal
probably
with.
Have won about 10 penalties, never mind one.
Yeah, with Bamford, and actually as the game starts to slow down a little bit, people lose energy in the second half, then Bamford holds it up. Maybe so. That was another thing that was very characteristic of today's game. We seemed to lack energy. It was a very warm day. If you weren't there today, it was a very warm day today in Leeds, and we seemed to really be zapped of energy in that sort of last quarter.
I think part of it is just that we should be more goals up by that point, and therefore then at that stage you're okay to play out, because we deservedly would have been 3-0 probably by that point.
Yeah.
In which case a little bit of legginess at that stage isn't really going to cost you anything. It's our failure to get ourselves in the position we should be at that point. And as well, if you're 3-0 up, Derby are not trying then. They'd be just... Like, if Klitsch's penalty had gone in, they would have just put their feet up. There's no way they were coming back from it.
It gave them the feeling that they could come back as well. I think the penalty was psychologically important for Derby as well as for us. It just gave them the idea that, oh, maybe this is our day. We've been shit for 70 minutes, but we can attack now. We might get something out of this. And you could tell by the way they celebrated the goal and then celebrated at the end that they'd got that blood in their nostrils and thought, well, the few players that remained from that match, but there was definitely the sense of, oh, we can do the playoff match again here. And we probably had the same thing where it started creeping into our minds.
Is that the thing that's perhaps most worrying about this? Because these games happen, and they've happened a little bit too frequently for my liking at the start of the season at home. It's that mental weakness has crept back in again. Is that perhaps the worrying thing?
Yeah, we just need to stop doing this. I know it's stating the obvious, but if we don't do this for a couple of games, then it'll stop happening.
The only solution is like 5-2-0 wins at home. That would be fine. That would do it.
Or 2-5-0s.
That'd do it as well.
either way is fine.
We keep getting drawn into tight games when on the balance of play, they are not tight games.
Yeah.
Are we seeing maybe now what's wrong with Marcelo Bielsa?
There's nothing wrong with him.
But do you think there is? Because he's stuck with this team come hell or high water, when maybe a more proactive manager might have put in Nketiah and Costa and actually allowed themselves to play themselves back on the bench. Because if they don't turn it on today, then there's an argument then for putting them back on the bench or whatever. But it just feels like he sticks with it too much.
No, I don't know what you mean. I thought Costa would actually start today.
Yeah.
Because Harrison was taken off at half time, wasn't he, in the last game? And I thought that'd probably be the end of him. Not in a Jack Clark sense. He's not that finished. But I thought that would be Costa's chance to get in. I thought he'd stick with Bamford, because overall I think that's been working for him.
Yeah.
I thought we missed Forshaw today as well, actually. At 1-0 with, a bit of pressure building with 20 minutes left, I thought someone like Forshaw would have probably helped us more than Shackleton, just because of the way he's a more forward-thinking player than Forshaw, whereas his little spinny circles and passing it sideways actually does kill a bit of time.
Yeah, do you think we've maybe seen what we miss from Forshaw a little bit now, the metronome in midfield, and you can see why Bielsa likes him?
Yeah, both. I mean, the Barnsley game was saying they had more, they got more out of us than any team so far this season. And I think, yeah, Forshaw's lack in there, or maybe it's a case of putting somebody else at 10 and moving Click back if Forshaw's not playing. Shackleton will be brilliant, but maybe he's the player that needed to come off, and we put somebody a bit more solid in the middle. But who is more? Robbie Gotts? Is he going to come on, shore things up?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Right, so let's talk about Matthias Click then and that penalty. What's going on there? Are we annoyed at him for trying the same stunt again? Because that's about, what, 2 feet away from being another glorious result.
If you do have a copy of the new issue of the Square Ball that came out today with a drawing of a triumphant Matthias Click on the cover, please don't bin it. It wasn't that bad. He was close. It was near. Maybe it was our fault.
It was annoying that having sent the keeper the wrong way, he just trundled it past the post, because he'd very much dived to the left and he'd already gone when he hit it. If he'd have been watching, he didn't need to put it so near the post. He could have passed it a foot to the off centre and it'd have gone in.
You just showed me the replay. I hadn't seen it until now, but because I was watching it side on, the way he reacted, he sort of reacted because he stroked it in and he was like, oh, another penalty scored. And then his reaction when it went wide made me realise it must have been really, really close. And it was really, really close. But it's just, I said to him, after it happened, I said to, it was Phil Hay sitting next to me, I preferred it when we didn't get penalties. Bring those days back. It's not worth the hassle. Because all that's going to happen is you think, oh, right, the last game, Click takes it, and right, great, another one, Click will do it. And he can't. We can't. So even if the next one, if Kiko Casilla comes up and he scores it, when we get a penalty in the next game, you just think, oh, no, he's not going to score two in a row. Maybe it's part of the whole thing that's building with, it gets the last 5 minutes, you think, 1-0, we're going to concede. But now we get a penalty. Nope, not going to go in.
We saw a couple of little bit of moments from Kiko today, didn't we? Just those little wobbles again. And we did say on the other podcast that we are going to see him across the season because he's a keeper and keepers are mental and he's a mental keeper. However, isn't it just funny how it's Derby?
There was one bit where he was blocked off by someone. It was in front of the South Stand, so I didn't have a very good view from the cop. But it was a very deep ball into the box and he decided to come for it. And he got almost to the edge of his box, it seemed, and then was blocked and it dropped about 2 metres away from him still. And he was completely stranded out at one side. And he thought, please give us a free kick here. But the ref didn't. And I have absolutely no idea who it was that he bumped into.
He was giving eyes to the ref afterwards, or the liner, saying, you should have been giving me a free kick there, but it would have been very soft. The thing is, he'd already smelt blood, hasn't he, earlier on? I think, was it before that he came out for that catch that took him to the very edge of the area? And he kind of did a little, like almost like a cartoon, right at the very end, you know, to stop himself falling off the cliff. Kind of thing.
My favourite bit was towards the end of the first half. There's no, bear in mind, when this is happening, there's no Derby player within about 50 yards while this is happening. But the ball is going back and bouncing outside our penalty area, and Liam Cooper is running back with it. And he kind of points at Kiko, and Kiko points at him, and neither of them's going for it. And they're both leaning to it. I was like, it's happening again. Yeah. but there's with nobody near, so nothing could possibly have happened. But he's just like, no.
Somebody did tweet us a picture of, I think it was in the first half of that, of the two of them with the ball between them. And it was, there was a moment where you had that flashback and you thought, I've lived this moment before.
You know that meme of the two Spider-Men just pointing at each other? But if you put a ball in between them, that's exactly what it's like when those two come. I don't know, maybe Derby just now have this thing over us, but that does mean at least that we'll win at Pride Park, whoever owns it, single time.
I don't think they've got anything over us. I thought they were terrible today. I thought they're a bad side. And again, they just got the bounce, didn't they, towards the end. And as we said in the first half, capitalised on the switch in momentum.
I'm yet to see their goal back. Have you seen it on the TV, Dan? What happened?
They just got a man over. It was, funnily enough, an overload on the left-hand side. And Bielsa has spoken in the post-match about the reason why he did the change with taking Pablo off and bringing Douglas on was to shore up their right-hand side, our left, because they were getting too much joy down there. And that's why he did what he did to make it a bit more solid on the left. And lo and behold, the goal came on from an overload on the other side, didn't it? And they just got a man over who just laid it off to the outside.
I would say of all the subs that came on today, Douglas was probably the worst. I wasn't impressed. And the first thing he did was sort of jump underneath the ball that made you think. Bielsa's theory that he talked about last year about not wanting to bring on a substitute because they won't be up to the pace of the game. I think we saw that three times today. Douglas was one in particular who just never looked like he was. And Ketia did okay. He started dropping deep and linking up the play and stuff. And Costa was doing all right. He just couldn't get a run on a player. But when it's Douglas and it's like that crucial situation, I mean, I'm not Bielsa, but I didn't think Alioski was particularly in much trouble at left back. He'll do his best. He'll run, but that's Douglas. You always kind of feel he is maybe going to get caught out.
I think Pablo needed to come off as well. He was 10 minutes before he took him off. I was kind of saying, look at him, he's absolutely knackered. Mm. But then I think when he goes off, he's the player that probably everyone else looks to, as in, like, where's Pablo? I know I can give him the ball. And when he's not there, I think potentially that does damage the flow of our game. Maybe we just get, because he's not getting any younger. We need to get more used to passing to someone other than Pablo. Mm. But absolutely everything hinges around him, doesn't it? So I don't know if that affected the sort of possession we were having as well at that point, because people were just panicking. And, you know, we've got Nketiah, who we don't really know his game that well, other than he can come on and score.
There didn't seem any reason for us to start dropping as deep as we did. We played most of the first hour. The game was in front of the centre circle in Derby's half. It was madness. We can't, I mean, the Derby fans, they've already picked up on a tweet I sent in the first half that said it was ironically like watching a training session. That's now starting going around Derby Twitter, so I look forward to just ignoring all that while they think they're making a point. But they are awful. Like, that team is garbage. So there was really no reason, whichever of our players are on the pitch, for us to be dropping so deep towards the end of the match and letting them have the ball and come at us and get some confidence and get some attacks going. Because if it was just Keogh passing to Clark for 20 minutes until they give us the ball, that would have been absolutely fine.
I think what we saw in that second half was they just started to push their players further forward. They just got more men.
Should have pushed them back.
Well, yeah, but if they're
push
putting,
them over.
If they're putting two men wide and attacking, it's going to force our...
Just push them off the pitch.
Entire play backwards, isn't it?
Just shove them. Don't tell me Alioski can't just run up to them each one by one and just push them off the pitch.
I think on something like that, though, because Nketiah, when he's on the pitch, he can always afford to just stand a little bit further towards the goal than Richie Keogh, because he knows if we break, he can then put himself back onside and then still outpace him by a long way. Maybe we needed to be a bit more attacking in that sense, rather than allowing them to just have the ball. And we weren't pressing in the same way either, because like in the first half when we were pressing them coming out of defence, they were shit and they were losing the ball and they were kicking it out of play. The keeper was crap, he kicked it out of play a few times. They all looked entirely uncomfortable with it. They had Tom Huddleston there playing a sort of fat Calvin Phillips role, trying he was the one they looked to though to pick the ball out of the defence. But he's so slow. Like, if you press him, he's got such a turning circle on him.
Like an oil tanker.
Yeah. Him and Keogh are just very big men who need to be put under pressure, but we didn't really do it.
I'll tell you one change. I mean, we obviously concentrate very much on Leeds, but Chris Martin coming on for Jack Marriott, I think may have made a difference because he scored the goal, didn't he, as well, in the end, because Marriott, I noticed within about 15 minutes of the game starting, he was standing in our half.
Just moaning.
Yelling at the goalkeeper for not giving him the ball right. And then we was kind of being asked to press our defenders. I remember him, he kind of ran towards Ben White, who just passed it around him. And then there's nobody anywhere near him, and he just gave up. And he was doing that all the time, just running around moaning. So I think once they got up to 11 players on the pitch with Chris Martin replacing him, they suddenly had somebody up front.
He worked, didn't
he? Was going to work and just not moan. And that kind of, and that gave them something to actually have up front.
And funnily enough, it's the workhorses that we struggle against a little bit more when the games start to get away from us. Do we have anything to worry about?
I mean, yeah, it's just how many points we're going to win the league by, really, isn't it?
I mean, they had one shot on target.
Yeah,
I don't even know how many we had. We had lots.
This is from Graham Smith's report of the Bielsa's press conference. Says, but the real situation is they created just one chance in 90 minutes and we created many. If this is not enough to win, throws hands in the air. And it's kind of, you look at the performance up until the last 10 minutes and say, if that's not enough to get us 3-0 up and winning, then what more? What do you actually change? Do you want to dismantle this team that creates five chances in a half? And as you said to me on the way here, that we sack Bielsa, get Eddie Gray and put the kids in. We're getting to that level because there's not really much other options when we've got a team that is so good. Are we still top of the league? I suppose the other games are still playing, aren't they?
As it stands, I'll say yes.
Yeah, so it's difficult. But we need to, I don't know.
We are as it stands at the minute. Yes, we are.
We need to start doing something at Elland Road to start winning at home. That's where it needs to. And to remove this atmosphere of tension that builds towards the end of the game. And the only thing, it's totally reductive and chicken and egg, because the only thing that would solve it is some 2-0, 3-0 wins at home. Until we get that consistently and Elland Road feels like the cliche fortress again, we're just always going to have this feeling.
Yeah, and I think part of that it's fueled by this idea, this collective kind of tension, this idea that, all right, Nketiah and Costa need to start. Until you do that, there's going to be a clamour for that.
And then when it doesn't work,
then it will be fine. But if it doesn't, but then it's released that pressure. And we can say, actually, all right, Bamford was fine, as was Jack Harrison.
I think the only thing that solves it, I mean, you were the perfect example in the first game of the season, Bristol, when we were watching it at the Brudenell, and we were, 3-1 up, and they had a free kick, and you left the room because you couldn't bear to watch a free kick when we had a 2-goal lead. And that was kind of, you could feel that in a way today that I've not felt it anywhere else apart from probably the start of this season, because there was tension in the Forest game. The Swansea match ended up with a huge disappointment, and then this moment in the last minutes when Derby had that free kick, it's audible. You can hear everybody in the stands. You can't hear we can hear, they're all turning to each other and going, oh, we're going to concede here, and that it just creates this noise, and it just feels weird. And I don't know if that's something that the players hear and like feel as well, but I was,
it transmits itself.
It does. I was sitting on the gantry, and me and Phil Hay are both looking at each other saying, and I said to him, I've not heard a football stadium sound like this when the home team is winning. And that's what's weird about it. And it's not, you know, there's that risk of people thinking that you're blaming the fans or something. And it's not. It's like, I'm the same.
It's human nature.
Me and him are standing there going like, oh no, we're probably going to concede from this. But then you suddenly realise that there's 30,000 people all saying the same thing to each other. And it just sounds weird. And the only thing that, I keep saying, the only thing that cures it is we start winning by a couple of goals. Preferably 20.
And once we've slept on it, we may well be top. Let's have a rifle through some heroes and villains then from today's game. Any candidates that we've got?
For heroes?
Either or, just chuck some names in the mix.
Jermaine Beckford. I shook hands with him. He looks lovely in a suit.
He had white Converse on with his blue suit, didn't he?
He looked great. I was saying to him, as I was coming off the gantry, he was talking to Phil Hay, and he just looked at me and shook my hand while he was talking to me. He doesn't have a fucking clue who I am. But that was nice. That was probably, that was a great moment.
Yeah, well, as I said in one of the previous podcasts, I used to see him all the time around Sainsbury's because he lived near me in Bradford.
Yeah.
Nice guy.
Yeah, and he looks, he knows how to wear a suit.
I don't shop at Sainsbury's anymore. They've opened an Aldi since. It's cheaper. Any other heroes and villains?
Ben White, just really like him. Him and Cooper I thought were very good today. And seeing, I think that it was the difference of seeing how we play out from the back versus how they play out from the back. He's really good. He's Ben White.
The effortless way he just turns away from their players as well. Like, it's just, it's like a one-man piss take. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
You're still expecting a moment almost where you go, fucking hell, Ben. But actually, there have been none so far this season and he's doing really, really well, isn't he?
And you know, if he has one now, he's got enough credit in the bank for you to go, okay, well, normally he's fine.
He's probably, I mean, I wonder if we'll be saying at the end of the season, he's like the best defender we've had since Woodgate or Ferdinand or something ridiculous. But
I was actually thinking of Rio Ferdinand today, the way he was sort of effortlessly spinning away from people. Because as much as he left, and we don't like to say nice things about him, he was a fucking amazing player. It was Rio Ferdinand.
And the same sort of age as well, because we saw the young Ferdinand. I think we're seeing the young White.
Shame he's not ours.
Yes.
He will be when we go up this season, because we'll be top and we'll get promoted.
Villain, I'd like to nominate the person in the cop who was having a go at Phillips at the end.
Mm.
Don't really know what happened, but Phillips just came around, as they do, kind of applauding. And he took exception to someone in the cop who had obviously been...
They were right at the front.
...mouthing off at him. Yeah. And he just went over to him, and I think more or less just told him to fuck off.
Yes.
I couldn't... To which everyone else then around applauded. And I think the guy who'd said it probably felt about a foot tall.
Good. As the saying goes, you like to see it.
Yeah. As Phillips walked away, he then was like, he walked into the penalty area, still upon the left, but he kept turning back and like staring daggers at this guy. I would nominate Richard Keogh. What even is he? I don't know. What is Richard Keogh? He's not a human.
He just haunts the championship, doesn't he?
He's not a fucking human man, is it? He's got a horrible spectre. He's starting on giving away that stupid penalty and then trying to start a fight with Bamford about it. There was the bit where he went down injured, pretending he had a head injury, and then when it delayed the game and then was like, oh, he's all right again. And then he was starting on Alioski at full time as well. And he's shit. But he's not human. I think they should... I mean, I'm all in favour of...
Can we have him abolished? Destroyed?
Yeah. Yes.
You know what they say when a dog has bitten someone?
This is the move. Yeah, well, the movement to just abolish Richard Keogh.
Yeah.
And also because in my notes all the way through, I was writing down initials, I kept writing down AK, so I keep thinking he's Andrew Keogh. I would much rather Andrew Keogh was in the world than Richard Keogh. If we only had to choose one of the Keogh brothers, he is the one I would take.
He does look like a rabid dog, ironically enough.
He does.
That kind of foaming at the mouth, flecked, spit everywhere, you know.
So it was nice to bring back the old Martin Keown chant. Younger listeners might not remember, we used to sing the Isn't Ugly.
We don't have the bleep machine handy, do we?
That used to be a Martin Keown's song, but it fits nicely and is accurate.
I'm sure it will have come through loud and proud on Sky as well, which they'll have been delighted about as well. That gave me some extra pleasure listening to that.
So as we head off into the rest of the sunny Saturday, what's the overarching abiding feeling there, or any final points?
There's one more villain that we need to nominate. Michael, obviously, because towards the end of the first half, we were so comfortable and winning and everything was so great and Derby was so bad. I was thinking to myself, I nearly sent a message saying, surely even Michael won't be betting against Leeds under these circumstances, because we were so obviously going to win that game at halftime. But no, at halftime, I since discovered not only did he bet against Leeds, but what did you bet on at halftime?
The draw.
So people would say like, oh, should Click be a villain for missing the penalty? Should Bielsa, because he's not changing the team? Is it Barry Douglas isn't good enough left back? Is it the negativity? Is it what's happening? It's this little bastard and his curse-making predictions. Some little troll in the back of the cop is going to like, half-time's going, I know what the result's going to be. I've decided it's going to be a draw.
And especially how sanctimonious we've been about betting companies
this week. Well, exactly.
Your betting habits are now making content.
Your hollow tweets dangling it out there for likes, saying, oh, betting is bad. How much did you win today?
£37.
Right, that's it. That's it then for this episode.
Someone said ball. I need flailing.
And they'd be right. That is it for this episode of The Match Ball. We'll speak to you in a bit.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.